right. And thank you for listening to that last piece. And now we have our guest for the day, Jeffrey Smith. And Jeffrey, would you take a moment to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them your areas of expertise and the books that you've written?
Sure. I wrote Seeds of Deception, which is subtitled Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. And that became the world's best-selling book on genetically modified foods about 6 years ago. I also wrote Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods, which document 65 health risks of the genetically modified foods that Americans eat every day, including linking them to thousands of sick, sterile, and dead livestock, thousands of toxic and allergic reactions, and damage to virtually every organ and every system studied in lab animals. I have two films, Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals and Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, both online at our website, responsibletechnology.org. That's the Institute for Responsible Technology, where I'm the executive director.
I also saw you last night in the film Poison on the Platter.
Oh, really? Is that online now?
Yeah, I found it on Yahoo Video.
Great. I was actually, Poison on the Platter was produced by the top producer in Bollywood, Mahesh Bhatt. He's considered like the Steven Spielberg of India.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his director, Ajay Kanchan, directed, and Ajay looked at my genetic roulette and decided to craft the video around the documented evidence of health dangers, so it was all about the health issues. And then when he found out it was coming to India at the end of last year, he delayed the start of the film so he could interview me, and then set up the launch on the day that I could make it in Delhi in February. So I have a lot of knowledge about that film, and I get updates from the director from time to time. It's actually the most talked about film in India right now, and it highlights a lot of the health dangers and the madness about introducing GMOs. In fact, I was brought into the studio to do a fact-checking for it, and it starts out, as you saw from last night, with Hiroshima and 9/11 and hurricanes and earthquakes, and then said, what could be a greater danger by far than any of these man-made or natural disasters is genetically engineered foods because they're being fed to everyone on the planet. And, you know, as a fact-checker, I had to say, is this a scientifically defensible statement? And, of course, it is, because the deployment of this new infant technology is unprecedented, not only as it being fed to everyone in the population here in the United States and North America and in several places around the world, but it also is being planted outdoors where it cross-pollinates and the seeds spread so that the irreversible genetic pollution can outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste.
Could you tell us a little more about the health impacts of eating GMOs that
are
known
today?
There's
quite a bit, in fact. We could speak for a couple of hours just on that. The process of genetically engineering a crop is interesting. You take a gene from, say, bacteria or viruses, and you put it into make millions of copies, put it into a gene gun, and shoot that gun into a plate of plant cells, hoping that some of the genes make it into the DNA of some of those cells. Then you grow the cells through a cloning process into a new genetically engineered plant. Now, irrespective of whatever gene you put in, the process creates massive collateral damage in the plant DNA with hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. Genes can be turned off permanently, turned on permanently. They can be change their levels of expression. In fact, there's a holistic response in the plant where a single insertion can change the output of hundreds or thousands of genes, up to 5% of the genes, the natural genes in the plant. Now, what this means is you end up with crops that could have much higher levels of allergens, toxins, carcinogens, anti-nutrients. It's kind of a genetic roulette. You don't know what you're getting, and almost none of those potential changes are evaluated before a GM crop gets put on the market. Now, when they asked the FDA scientists, you know, 15 years ago, what do you think about this genetically engineered crops? Would they be safe? The overwhelming consensus was no. They would be inherently unsafe and could create these allergies, toxins, etc. They had urged their superiors to acquire long-term safety studies, but the person in charge of policy at the FDA was Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president. Monsanto is a large biotech company that makes most of the GM crops. So his policy claimed that the agency was not aware of any information showing that GM foods were different in any significant way, and therefore no safety testing was necessary. So it was the whole U.S. policy was based on a deception, a lie that was discovered 7 years after the fact when thousands of documents from the FDA's files became public because of a lawsuit.
Incredible. What other corporations perform genetic engineering?
Well, there's five that have commercialized GM food crops. Monsanto, DuPont, which owns Pioneer Seed, Dow, Syngenta, and Bayer Crop Science, the same Bayer company that produces the aspirin.
No, is it coincidence that Monsanto and Dow both were manufacturing Agent Orange?
Well, it's not a coincidence at all, because Monsanto has a history of producing some of the most toxic chemicals in the world, and so does Dow. And the thing is, this is no different. They also have a history of lying about the safety of their products. Monsanto got convicted and fined $700 million when it was discovered that they were quietly poisoning the people living in the town of Anniston, Alabama, next to their PCB factory. And a consultant actually put a fish in a nearby stream, and within 10 seconds it floated to the top, it shed its skin, and it was spurting blood. And they said, you know, they decided not to tell the local town not to do anything. One internal memo said, we can't afford to lose $1 of business. Now, according to the U.S. law, Monsanto is, in fact, in charge of determining if its own genetically engineered foods are safe. And we can go through some of the evaluations that have been done, both by Monsanto and others, showing that these things are dreadfully dangerous.
I just have a quick question for you about the gene gun. I had approached a Monsanto representative at a farm educational day and told him about the future of food and talked about the gene gun, and he said that the gene gun is an antiquated piece of equipment. They don't use it anymore. They have more reliable methods these days. Are they doing anything different in that area?
Well, they may have more reliable things that they're using in the laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
There is a method using Agrobacterium, which is using a bacteria which does an infection, and that also creates massive collateral damage. The results of the research on that also show massive changes in the DNA, mutations up and down, and also the biggest source of the mutations is the second step, which is the cloning called tissue culture, and they're still using that as well. So in addition, it's like they've deployed in the food supply to these crops antibiotic-resistant marker genes, which could ultimately result in creating super diseases untreatable by antibiotics. And their response, their very lame response, is, oh, the most recent generation of stuff we're working on doesn't use those. Well, everything in the food supply, almost everything that's genetically engineered, already has it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're admitting, yes, it's dangerous, but our future ones are going to be devoid of such risk. Well, what about the current millions and millions of acres that have been planted, which might be creating diseases that cause death or unnecessary amputations because of these runaway, untreatable infections?
So regardless of their methods, the food is still unsafe?
Oh, yeah. In fact, let's just do a review of some of what we've found. Let's start with the laboratory research and then move to the actual experience in the field. There was some recent studies done by governments in Europe that found that the mice that were fed genetically engineered corn, the more you fed the corn to the mice, the less babies they had, and the babies were also smaller, so they were sickly compared to the ones that were fed non-GM corn. The mice also developed an immune response. There's also one study done in Russia showed that when the soy was fed to rats, female rats, before they got pregnant, more than half of their offspring died within 3 weeks, compared to only a 10% death rate when the mothers were fed non-GM soy. They also found that the rats' testicles changed the structure and color. In mice that were fed GM soy, their structure and function of their testicles changed. In fact, the young sperm cells were altered, and their embryos had altered levels of DNA expression, showing inherited traits and or traits to the next generation. The liver cells indicated toxic reactions. The digestive enzymes were suppressed dramatically, as much as over 75%. When Monsanto's own study fed their own corn that produces a toxic herb, a pesticide, when that was fed to rats, the rats had indications of being poisoned. When potatoes were fed to rats, they had potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system. I mean, we could go on, and I mm-hmm. do in my book. Mm-hmm. But the idea basically is there's already overwhelming, irrefutable evidence of harm, not only from the animal feeding studies, but also from the theoretical side, because most of the fundamental assumptions used as the basis for safety claims turn out to be untrue.
What percentage of Americans want GMOs labeled?
About 90%, and 53% say they would avoid GMOs if they were labeled. So what we're doing is we have a portable labeling guide, a non-GMO shopping guide, which you can get at Responsible Technology. Actually, an easier URL to remember is simply healthiereating.org, healthiereating.org, and that brings you to our site for our institute, and go just click on non-GMO shopping guide. And this, it turns out, to be a very important activism to avoid GMOs. It protects yourself from these potential dangers, and I'll tell you some really horrific problems with people in a moment. But by changing the brands of the foods you buy to avoid GMOs, it turns out it makes the use of GM ingredients a marketing liability for the companies,
mm-hmm.
and they will remove it. Now, this is not just theoretical. It's actually happened. It happened in Europe when they hit the tipping point of consumer rejection in April of 1999. Within a single week, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients in their European brands. When the tipping point of consumer rejection occurred against genetically engineered bovine growth hormone created by Monsanto, which is injected into cows to increase milk supply, but it also increases a hormone in the milk, which is linked to cancer, it has been rejected soundly over the last 2 to 3 years, one after the other, by major name brands. Like last month, Danone and Yoplait committed to remove all milk from treated cows in their yogurt production. Walmart's already taken out of their milk, and Starbucks out of their national stores. So it's on its way out because of an engineered tipping point of consumer education. So our campaign for healthier eating in America is doing just that regarding the genetically modified ingredients, to engineer a tipping point by giving people these shopping guides,
mm-hmm.
as well as informing them about the health risks.
That's excellent. That's actually the reason I asked you to come on the show. I read an article about you in the Positive News that came out of Ithaca, New York. And it said, we will end genetic engineering of the food supply in 2 years. And there's also concern that Monsanto is attempting to infiltrate the government more and more, with Michael Taylor possibly being appointed for the, I forgot what the name of it is, but some kind of food safety review board.
Yeah, Michael Taylor was the person who was in charge of policy at the FDA. He was Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president. And his policy was based entirely on deception. And so that policy was the primary reason why I think that millions of people are suffering because of the radical change in our food supply that occurred in 1996. Now, I mentioned some really horrific information about people. I'll tell you, the only human feeding study ever conducted, and there's only been, it's remarkable that this food is being fed to more than a billion people, and there's been one human feeding study published. There's actually another one that's going on that should have been banned. It's on children, and it's being used. It's very dangerous. But anyway, the only study ever conducted and published showed that the genes that are inserted into soybeans that make the soybeans non-treatable, non-killable by herbicide. They're called Roundup Ready soybeans because mm-hmm. they survive doses of Roundup herbicide. That Roundup Ready gene transferred from the soybean food into the DNA of the bacteria living inside the intestines of the people and continued to function. It stayed there on a stable basis. That means you eat genetically engineered foods for a short period of time and you may end up having these little genetically modified proteins produced inside your intestines, maybe for the rest of your life.
Mm.
Now, the protein produced by the soy has properties of a known allergen, which happens to be dust mite allergen, which means if you're allergic to dust, you might be permanently exposed with these proteins produced inside your intestines. But also, there's a class of genetically engineered crops that produce their own toxic pesticide. It's called BT, or Bacillus thuringiensis, named after the bacteria that produces this toxin naturally. Now, the BT toxin is used in its natural form by organic farmers and forestry and agriculture, sprayed on crops where it biodegrades soon after. But when it's accidentally sprayed on people, as it was in the Pacific Northwest by airplane when it was treating gypsy moths, hundreds of people reported allergic reactions. Some went to the hospital. Now people touching the cotton plants in India, picking the cotton or loading the cotton onto trucks or cleaning it, the cotton is designed to produce the BT toxin, and they're getting the exact same allergic reactions as those who were sprayed by the BT in its natural state.
Mm-hmm.
But the BT toxin in the crops, which would be cotton and corn, is thousands of times more concentrated than the BT in its natural spray form, and it's designed to be more toxic, which might explain why when they let livestock graze on the cotton plants in India after harvest, thousands and thousands of sheep and buffalo have perished very quickly. I was in one village in India in January, where they allowed their buffalo to graze on cotton plants for 7 or 8 years after harvest. And for the first time, January 3rd of last year, they allowed the buffalo to graze on BT, genetically modified BT cotton plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they grazed for one full day, and the next day the animals were unconscious and very sick, and the veterinarians could not revive them. After 3 days, all the 13 buffalo died. They also had deaths among sheep and goats, 26 sheep and goats. And in another state in India, there's widespread reports of death and reproductive problems and skin problems and other problems in buffalo that are eating the oilseed cakes from the cotton. And in another state, thousands of sheep perished, often within a week. Some colleagues of mine in India did a little feeding experiment where they took 9 sheep and 3 of them were fed one variety of Monsanto's BT cotton. Three were fed another variety. Another 3 were fed non-BT natural cotton.
Mm-hmm.
These are the plants, not the cotton itself. And within 30 days, all 6 sheep that were eating the genetically engineered cotton had died, and the 3 sheep that ate the non-GM cotton plants were fine. Now, these particular BT crops, the corn, was linked to thousands of sterile pigs or cows in the United States and dead livestock in Europe and Philippines. Now, it could be that the toxin itself is causing all of these problems, and it's the toxin which is produced by the gene inserted into the corn and cotton. So what this means is if you put the two findings together, the human feeding study where genes transfer to our gut bacteria and the fact that these corn varieties produce the BT toxin, then consider this. If you eat a genetically engineered corn chip, the gene that produces the BT toxin in the corn chip might transfer and embed itself and integrate into the DNA inside your intestines and continue to produce BT toxin inside your gut, possibly for the rest of your life. Now, based on what we know about the BT toxin, we know that it seems to create immune responses, allergic-type responses, and also can damage the lining of the intestines. In fact, it's designed to break open the stomach of insects and destroy their stomach and kill them that way. And there's indications that they do bind with gut proteins in animals and humans. So what we see possibly happening with BT, whether it's converting into our gut bacteria or just simply being exposed to our intestinal tract, is that we would predict an increase in related problems like allergies, maybe autism, autoimmune diseases, immune function in general, digestive problems, and that's exactly what we're seeing. In fact, when I speak at medical conferences, which I do regularly, and describe the problems with GMOs, many doctors come up to me and say, you know, we've seen a lot of gastrointestinal and related problems in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that the explosion of some of these symptoms, which happen to be, coincide with the introduction of GMOs, is because of GMOs.
Now, how is the industry attempting to reason that their product is of value?
Well, you see, there's a whole chorus of myth that has been spouted for years and years. The myth is that we need to eat genetically engineered crops because they are going to save the hungry world. Now, in my books and movies and in many other people's works, we show that actually it works against feeding a hungry world. It's actually a disaster. It takes money away from more appropriate technologies. The average GM crop does not increase yield. In fact, it reduces yield. And there are other responsible, organic, and sustainable methods that can increase, can double yield, whereas the average GM crop reduces it. They also have given the myth that it's been proven safe, which of course is not true, and I have proven otherwise, that it's overwhelming evidence of harm. It's not just me. I mean, with my genetic roulette, I worked with more than 30 scientists over 2 years and looked at all the different research that was done, and we have 1,150 endnotes, and it's clear evidence of harm. We also see that the industry has rigged their research to avoid finding problems, how they meticulously have bad science down to a science. And I describe that in Genetic Roulette in a chapter of 43 pages of just talking about how they use the wrong control groups, the wrong statistics, the wrong detection methods, and the wrong conclusions. Even though they designed to find nothing, they end up with dead animals and sick animals and smaller babies and whatnot, which they explain away or ignore. And sometimes they completely ignore their own raw data and just give conclusions that are false. They also have a tendency to attack the naysayers. In my book, Seeds of Deception, it's filled with stories of scientists who discovered adverse findings and were threatened or fired or stripped of responsibilities or later denied tenure, and about even the FDA's complicit participation in promotion of biotech. And it's not subtle. I mean, the White House told the FDA to promote the biotechnology industry. And one of the most recent commissioners of the FDA, when he was giving a PowerPoint presentation to the dairy industry, one of his first slides said, the purpose of the FDA is to, you know, vouchsafe the safety of food and drugs and to promote biotechnology. So it's absolutely overt. And in doing so, when a deadly epidemic traced to a genetically engineered brand of a food supplement called L-tryptophan killed about 100 Americans and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick or become permanently disabled in the 1980s, the FDA representative speaking before Congress withheld the information that the brand was genetically engineered, and that way protected the FDA and protected the biotechnology industry and set the path open for introducing more dangerous products.
How many Monsanto employees have worked for the U.S. government?
I don't know the number, but it's interesting when you track the individuals going back and forth through the revolving door. The former EPA administrator became a board member. The former U.S. trade representative, who was also the Secretary of Commerce, he became a board member. Someone who worked for EPA went to Monsanto, then became the number two person at the EPA. And with the bovine growth hormone, Margaret Miller used to work for Monsanto doing research on RBGH, which is the bovine growth hormone, and then took a position leading a department in the FDA that evaluated her own research. The person who was the lead reviewer of the RBGH in the FDA was a person that had been working under contract for Monsanto on RBGH. So all of the, you know, it's basically, as one person formerly with the FDA said, the regulatory agencies have done everything that Big Ag, which includes Monsanto, has asked them to do and told them to do. And so we have a situation where the gap between the Monsanto and the government is not a gap at all. It's sort of a melding.
And how do they freely move between industry and government?
Well, that's sort of been the history of government for the last few years, especially under the Bush administration, but with Monsanto it was...
Bush 1 or 2?
Actually, with Monsanto, it's been with Bush 1, Bush 2, and with Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been bipartisan support. As Dan Glickman said, who was a Clinton Secretary of Agriculture, what I saw generically from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid. And that, frankly, was the side our government was on. He said you felt like you were almost an alien, disloyal, by trying to present an open-minded view. So this demonstrates the success of the multi-million, hundreds of millions of dollars spent in ads and lobbying to convince and insulate the decision-makers that GMOs are good and, you know, will solve the problems of the human race.
How is Arthur Andersen connected to Monsanto?
Good question. Arthur Andersen Consulting was Enron's consultant, and when they were discovered to have participated in the illegal activities with Andersen, they dissolved or changed their name or something. The Arthur Andersen Consulting was also Monsanto's consultant, and in 1999 in January, at a biotech conference in San Francisco, a representative from the consulting company described to the audience how they had worked with Monsanto, and they asked the executives to describe what is your ideal future in 15 to 20 years. And the executives described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented. And Andersen Consulting worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. So it was a full effort to replace nature. The biotech industry has created genetically engineered components to replace virtually all of the fruit, vegetables, grains, beans, etc., that we eat. But soon after that January 1999 conference, about 3 weeks later, there was a government-funded scientist who had been gagged with threats of a lawsuit for 7 months, unable to describe what he had learned working under a grant from the UK government to create the ideal testing protocol for GMOs. And what happened was he was able to speak. And on February 16th, the gag order was lifted. Headlines were shot around Europe, 750 articles were written, and there was a big buzz around Europe about how GMOs could be extremely unsafe, and that hit the tipping point of consumer rejection. And by April of that year, the tipping point, Unilever declared that they wouldn't use GMOs in their European brands anymore, and by the rest of the week, virtually everyone followed suit.
Now, what if one of these people that's under a gag order just speaks regardless? What are the consequences for them?
It's interesting. It depends on... It's not a generic thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, Dr. Arpad Pusztai, the world's leading expert in his field, was given a $3 million grant by the UK government to create a protocol that would become the assessment process for the European Union for evaluating the safety of GMOs. And he took supposedly harmless GM potatoes and fed it to rats. Found the rats were damaged in virtually every organ in every system studied, with potentially precancerous cell growth and smaller brains and smaller testicles and damaged immune system, etc. And he went public with his concerns on a radio interview, on a TV interview, with permission from his director, and was a hero for about 2 days at the Institute. And then two phone calls were allegedly placed from the pro-GM UK Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of the Institute. And the next morning, Dr. Pusztai was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. His 20-member research team was disbanded. They never implemented the long-term safety testing protocols. Instead, while he was under a threat of speaking, they started a campaign to destroy his reputation in order to promote and maintain the reputation of biotechnology. So he had received letters from his director saying that if he spoke about what happened and if there was any economic damage associated with loss of business at the Rout Institute, then they would in turn sue him. And he was under pension, so he was in his late 60s, and so they would have lost his pension. His wife also worked for the Institute, so her job was in peril. So it was an economic gag order.
Mm-hmm.
But he was invited to speak before Parliament in February, And so that lifted the gag order, and they issued a letter saying he was able to get his data back and speak. And so with that letter, he was able to speak. And it went all around Europe, but it wasn't described much at all in the United States. In fact, Project Censored, a media watchdog group, described it as one of the 10 most underreported events of the year. And that is why the reticence of the media to talk about the health dangers of GMOs or the scandals associated with it or the abdication of regulatory responsibility by the FDA, all that is reason why, if you ask the average American, have you ever eaten a GM food in your life, 60% say no, 15% say I don't know, and yet most people eat it every day because it's in soy, corn, cotton, canola, and sugar beets. So all the vegetable oils that people eat, soy, corn, cotton, and canola, the soy and corn derivatives, and now the sugar supply that uses sugar beets starting late last year, it's all genetically engineered unless it says organic or it says non-GMO. So that means that most people eat it in their processed foods every day.
That's incredible. Let me take this opportunity to invite our listeners, if there's anyone out there who has a question for Jeffrey Smith, feel free to give us a call. The telephone number here is area code 315-859-4200. That's 315-859-4200. And if we're speaking and I get a call, I'll just have to interrupt you, and then we'll get back to what we're speaking about.
Right.
What lies do you think Monsanto or biotech will attempt to sell us in the future?
Well, they pick the flavor of the month to craft their message. So with the high price of gas, they were saying that genetically engineered biofuels will cause us to solve that problem. When they looked at global warming, they said, oh, genetically engineered crops will solve that problem. When, you know, with hunger, genetically engineered crops are supposed to solve that problem. It's all promises into the future. Now, honestly, I can't say that ultimately they'll be unsuccessful, maybe in 100 or 200 years, or maybe someday when we understand the language of the DNA. Right now, we're feeding the products of an infant science to the population of the world and releasing them into the environment where they can never be recalled. And most of the science behind the technology of GM crops is obsolete and at least 40 years old. I'm not against genetic engineering per se. I'm not against the use of it in laboratories and in controlled environments. I'm not against the application of genetic engineering in human gene therapy that's not inheritable, in the production of medicines or important proteins, as long as there's a respect for what can go wrong, which obviously wasn't there with the L-tryptophan disaster, the epidemic that killed so many people in the 1980s from a genetically engineered food supplement. But we have no justification now of deploying this technology into the entire food supply or releasing even a single genetically modified organism into the environment, because in our current understanding of the technology and the things that could go wrong, it could be a greater disaster than anything we have seen so far because of its huge exposure.
It sounds like the Monsanto Corporation is a group of disaster capitalists who will use any kind of impending crisis to sell us their technology.
Let me tell you a little bit about what I've discovered talking to former Monsanto people. One former Monsanto scientist said that his colleagues were doing the safety studies on the bovine growth hormone. They found in the milk the higher levels of insulin-like growth factor 1, which is a very powerful hormone that's in both cows and in humans. And high levels of IGF-1 in humans are linked to much higher levels of cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer. And it's in much higher levels in the milk. And these three scientists decided not to drink milk again, unless it was organic, because they refused to take the milk from cows treated with their company's own product, which they were doing the safety testing for. They also told me that they discovered adverse findings in rodents that were being fed genetically modified crops, and so they were trying to figure out how to create the studies so that they would downplay or hide the adverse findings. I talked to another person who used to work at Monsanto and he actually took the job because he had been recruited and read the words of CEO Robert Shapiro, who was very excited about all the positive things that genetic engineered crops could do. So at an employee orientation meeting in the headquarters in St. Louis, Kirk Azevedo told all of his new employees, colleagues, how excited he was and all the things that Robert Shapiro said about feeding the world and cleaning up in-process waste in factories and creating pharmacies in the field. So after he was done and the meeting was over, the vice president pulled him over and said, wait a minute, what Robert Shapiro says is one thing. What we do is something else. We're here to make money, and we don't even know what he's talking about. He's the face man that tells a story. So he was completely disillusioned from the beginning. And then when he found out that the genetically modified cotton was producing potential new proteins that were never intended and was being fed to dairy cows right down his block, he started trying to blow the whistle inside Monsanto, saying, we can't do this. We could be hurting the cows, which could be hurting the milk or the meat, and it's changes in the cotton plants that we have never even characterized. We've never even evaluated whether they're safe. They're just unexpected changes, and they ignored him and ostracized him, and he left the company.
Why don't corporations see the danger of their policies or, you know, the dangers of the results of what they're doing?
Well, there's certain levels of compartmentalization. And also certain levels of justification. Like compartmentalization, those that were doing the safety studies on bovine growth hormone decided not to drink milk anymore. But they're not in charge of withdrawing their product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that are intimately involved with the science. It's like if you look at the FDA, the scientists, memo after memo, described possibilities of allergies and new toxins, increased levels of existing toxins, bioaccumulation of toxins from the environment, and each one of those, every time the policy was rewritten before it came out, more and more of their concerns were removed. One of the memos was from a very angry scientist that said, what's become of this policy? It basically doesn't address any of the unpredicted side effects. It's a political document, not a scientific. There's no science in it. So when that new devoid of science policy was set up the chain to the Office of Management and Budget, and to the White House counsel, they wanted it to be even more favorable. Like one said, you should eliminate all these extra pages that talk about the environmental problems because it gives the impression that there's a problem. Another one said we should make it clear that there's no difference in the safety between GM crops and non-GM crops. So it went up the chain of command. The crops got safer and safer, but they're still the same dangerous technology. And, you know, in Monsanto, I talked to two different current Monsanto scientists, one that does contract work for them and one that works for them or did at the time. And when I started questioning them about the dangers and I started going into more detail and I nailed them about things that absolutely could go wrong and could hurt a certain percentage of the population, possibly even killing people, their response after was, well, we need genetic engineering because it will save the planet. It will feed the world, you know, the increasing population, which is all lies. It's all myth. They don't know it because they're not the agricultural scientists. You know, I said to one of them, but, you know, organic and sustainable methods are much more effective than genetic engineering. And he had no idea and wasn't really interested in looking at it because he had made up his mind and didn't want to be confused with the facts.
I think it was Francis Morlepe who said that hunger doesn't come from a lack of food, but a lack of democracy.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, there's more food per person than any time in human history, 4.3 pounds per person. And, you know, a lot of times when there's a famine, there's a general movement of food out of the area because people don't have the money to buy it, and so those that produce it export it. So it is really a situation of economics and distribution and political organization that determines about whether the fact that there's 25,000 to 30,000 people that go hungry, that die it's 800 million people that go hungry every day, and 25,000 to 30,000 that die of malnutrition or starvation every day.
Incredible. What is the Clinton connection to the Monsanto?
Well, I said earlier that there were two phone calls placed from the UK Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of this institute, which resulted in the firing of the scientist who had discovered adverse findings in GMOs. It is likely that those phone calls originated from the Monsanto headquarters to the Clinton administration, then went from Clinton's office to Tony Blair's office, then to the director. Clinton had been, and Gore have both been big cheerleaders of GMOs. A friend of mine actually had tested his preference of his cows with GM corn and non-GM corn, and found that the cows wouldn't eat the GM corn. And so when he was at a rally of farmers and Al Gore was running for president, he said to Al Gore that he didn't think GMOs were, should be out there. And Al Gore said, "Well, there's no difference." And he said, "Well, my cows think there is," and explained what happened. And Gore said, did anyone else notice this? And a bunch of hands went up, and maybe more than a dozen hands went up of farmers that noticed that their animals chose not to eat GMOs when given a choice. It turns out that many varieties of animals have that, like cows, pigs, elk, deer, raccoons, squirrels, geese, mice, and rats. So Gore was under the impression that there was no difference. He was surprised to see the farmers had a response, but I don't think it's ever gotten through to him that GMOs are so dangerous. I'd love to talk to him, but I hate to spend the time trying to reach him.
What's being done to reverse the idea that plants or life can be patented?
How do we reverse that?
Is there anything being done right now to reverse that, or how do we reverse that?
Well, you see, the biotech industry has had a very strong hand in creating international agreements on intellectual property, like the TRIPS agreement. And like the whole World Trade Organization gives an opportunity for these industries to set the trends around the world. There's a lot of people who are angry at patenting of life. There are certain countries that don't accept it. But right now, there's no political will in this country to release that. I mean, that is one of the main reasons why we have GMOs, is because these companies can then patent the seeds and patent the traits and take ownership of the food supply in a big way.
And I don't know if this question is too big, but how do we remove corporations from the government?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about the fact that corporations were given the rights of persons years ago, and I understand that that was based on a misinterpretation of a Supreme Court law, that someone had scratched a summary of what happened on the bill, which was actually in contrast to what actually was ruled, not a bill, but a ruling. And so this whole concept that corporations should have personhood status and also be that the people within the corporations are protected, like you can't pierce the corporate veil and put them in jail unless there's personal liability. So there's a whole movement around trying to reverse that, at least even in local areas. But I think you really talked about that is really one of the fundamental problems, is that the influence of corporations on the political decision making now, which comes from not only the role of lobbying, which Obama is focusing on, but also the way in which elections are financed. The expense of elections, and the fact that in order to get elected you essentially have to be corporately funded. To me, finance reform is a key to restoring democracy and eliminating the corporatocracy, which is what we have in place right now.
Do you know what Vilsack's connection to Monsanto is?
Yeah, Governor Vilsack. I live in Iowa, and he was our governor. He was the biotech governor of the year in 2001. He's been very pro-biotech as governor. Now, when he was appointed or nominated for Secretary of Agriculture, there was an outcry, and tens of thousands of people signed petitions, so he was sort of put on alert. Now, the word I'm getting from the press about Vilsack these days is that he seems to be open-minded more than he was as governor about organic and sustainable. And I've got some friends of mine who are friends of his who like him and think that he's more open-minded than people are giving him credit for. So I will hope that that's true, and I'll hope to meet him and share what I meet him again. I've met him before once briefly, but I hope to share with him in greater detail the information that I just handed him, and who knows what happened to it.
Would you like to speak briefly about Obama's consideration of Michael Taylor for the Food Safety Working Group?
You know, people who work with Michael Taylor now that I know like to defend him, saying he doesn't seem to be in line with Monsanto's policies. He's for food safety testing, mandatory labeling, and whatnot. That may be true, but he was one person who, more than almost anyone in the world, was responsible for the introduction of genetically modified crops on the planet by causing an abdication of actually what I would consider to be an illegal policy to go through at the FDA, where they illegally granted generally recognized as safe status, grass status, to GMOs, taking complete legal precedence. I haven't spoken to him personally. I don't know him now. I'm just nervous based on his history.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing I would like to mention, and that is, what can people do to end this genetic engineering of the food supply? We mentioned earlier about our campaign for healthier eating in America. One of the four targeted demographic groups that we believe are like the low-hanging non-GMO fruit, where there's receptivity and action that can be taken, is GM-free school campaign. This is not only schools that have school meals with young kids, but also campuses. I actually found it very easy in my college many, many years ago to rally the students in order to get healthier food in our dining halls. I almost went to Hamilton. In fact, I got accepted and went out there and got interviewed and looked around, and I liked it, but I decided not to go there because I had just come out of a small high school and wanted a bigger college. But I know the campus, and it's in my mind right now. I was there on a snowy day, and I tell you, it's a small enough school, so it should be very easy for a small group of dedicated students, even one enthusiastic student, to create a GM-free policy in the dining hall and in the vendors on campus. Now, we have support materials. We have a video you can play on campus. The most important videos, I would say, would be The World According to Monsanto, which is a 90-minute feature film which creates incredible outrage in those that watch it. And we have a 3-minute video that we put in the bonus material called What We Can Do. It's very important, if you're going to show that film, to get in touch with our website, which gives some information about how to rally the energy created by the film into constructive activism to end GMOs. Otherwise, people just leave frustrated, angry, and depressed.
Right.
But it's actually, you could take all that energy and mold it into some very powerful activism. And we have, for GM-free school campaigns in general, we have a 60-page manual, and we have a video called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, and we have a whole support kit. We've got the four targeted demographic groups are healthcare practitioners, GM-free schools, and also parents that are associated with the schools of younger kids, religious organizations, and the health-conscious shopper, those that buy from natural food stores. So we actually offer our non-GMO shopping guide and our health risks brochure on GMOs free through natural food stores, and they can buy it from their distributor like UNFI or others. So we have programs to do outreach to tens of millions of people. So if anyone who's listening is inspired, they want to do something, then go on our website at healthiereating.org and look at some of the tools that are there. And you can also get in touch with us, and our GM-free school director can get in touch, can guide you on steps. Because as a small school, it shouldn't be very difficult. You may have some contractual obligations and things, but when you start educating the student body about the health dangers, and it's easy to do, then people will want to know what's GM and what's not GM so that they can start choosing the non-GM entrees. And when there's more and more students choosing that, then, of course, the service-oriented food companies are going to want to give the students and faculty what they want.
That's an excellent resource. What can you tell us about H.R. 875, which was introduced by Rosa DeLauro and her husband Stanley Greenberg, who is working for Monsanto?
All right. Well, H.R. 875, it's very interesting. You probably have gotten 15 or 20 emails about it.
At least, yeah.
I mean, I just got one from my brother yesterday and said, I'm being swamped by these. What can I do to stop them? First of all, there's a few. I personally believe that the concerns are overhyped, but nonetheless of concern.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole big thing about food safety. We had peanut recalls and spinach and pepper and whatnot. Now, looking at the bill, and I haven't read the whole bill. It takes hours and hours to read the bill, but I've read summaries of the bill and analyses of the bill from various people. There's some ways of strengthening the FDA's hand. They don't currently have the ability to issue recalls. They have to go to court to do so. This gives them the ability to issue recalls. It increases the number of inspections. It increases the ability for the FDA to do its job. Now, I have two minds about that. I think they've been very irresponsible about doing their job and have been sort of the handmaiden of corporate interests over the years. On the other hand, I'm always saying that we need more regulations to more closely guard the safety, you know, especially to test GMOs. So I have to say that I have to be in favor of them having more ability to evaluate and enforce the safety standards, even though I'm concerned because I'm not always convinced that their motivations are pure.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, what it does is it asks all these food institutes and food preparers and anyone that creates food to institute a series of documentations and methods for evaluating the hazards, and it gives the government an opportunity to require certain standards for the food that's being produced. Now, what this does is it becomes a one-size-fits-all legislation, which doesn't fit all. It becomes a potential destructive agent for small farms, for small companies. In fact, it's so poorly written that it could theoretically apply to anyone that prepares food. Now, some of the emails going around suggest that this is written that way on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that DeLauro's husband, who does polling, who worked for Clinton and others as a pollster, also has Monsanto as a client, they say that this was designed specifically to give the feds a chance to eliminate the non-industrial agriculture sector. While that might be true, there's also a history of Congress making terrible bills and forgetting that one size doesn't fit all. Like, there was a bill that was supposed to be enacted on February 10th of this year, which would require any item sold to children below the age of 12 to be tested for lead and phthalates. Now, because it was so controversial, it was delayed for a year. This particular bill, which was in response to the China lead mm-hmm. toy disaster, was, again, a one-size-fits-all deal, and I talked to a doll maker who makes handmade dolls and sells them for $15. And she said if this bill were enacted, she'd have to charge $15,000
mm-hmm.
per doll because of the testing costs of all the different fibers that she uses in her doll. I talked to another friend of mine who makes, you know, handmade children's clothes, same deal. It would basically eliminate all cottage industries.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stopped the implementation of the bill, and they're going to study it, maybe rewrite it or something. So here we have a situation where you have these onerous responsibilities being levied on anyone that produces food. It's obviously a terribly written bill. And so there's progressive organizations like the Organic Consumers Association and Food and Water Watch and others that are in favor of certain components of the bill and simply say that the bill must create as an exception to all of its rules about food safety, you know, any small production facility, any small farmer, and any organic farmers, sustainable farmers, they have to be completely exempted from the requirements of the bill in order for it to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. I mean, you could decide whether you want to determine whether it was a conscious effort to destroy organic agriculture, or as many people think, no, it's just a terribly written bill. And some people have interviewed Congresswoman Dolores, and she said, you know, I'm still in favor and support of CSAs, community support agriculture, and farmers markets and organic farmers, and that, you know, it's kind of a placeholder bill, and it's not what people think. So you can decide on your own whether you choose to believe her or not, but certainly it demonstrates the power of the Internet to get people riled up.
Mm-hmm. I have a few loose end questions here that didn't really fit into other parts of the discussion. One of them is, what is genetic programming?
Genetic programming.
And maybe that's just a term.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a specific term that I'm not aware of. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be the epigenetic influence of the environment on how genes get expressed. It could be the genetic engineering ways of manipulating genes so that it gets what it wants out of plants. So I don't know. But I don't know if the term is generic or if it relates to something specific, so I'd rather not answer.
Sure. And do you know what's happening now with seed cleaners being charged heavy fines for contamination of GM crops?
Seed cleaners, it's very interesting. Monsanto's plans are their ideal situation as the largest seed company in the world. They don't want farmers to save their own seeds. So they have different techniques that they use to minimize that or eliminate it ultimately if they can. To give you the background, if you buy a genetically modified seed from Monsanto, you sign a contract that says that you will not save that seed in the next generation, but you'll sell all your products into the market and then go back and buy new seeds from the market, which means from Monsanto or whatever. And they have actually sued farmers over and over and over again for allegedly violating the seed-saving prohibition. And in some cases, the farmers have saved seeds, and in some cases, the farmers have simply been contaminated by nearby fields. And because they are small and don't have the legal clout that Monsanto has, sometimes they'll pay tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars just to prevent the lawsuit from going through, because they could be destroyed by the lawsuit whether or not they're wrong. In fact, one farmer in Canada fought Monsanto right up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter how you were contaminated. It could be wind or insects or intentional. It doesn't matter. But because Monsanto's intellectual property is growing on your field and you harvested it with the rest of the crops, and when you replanted it, you replanted Monsanto's seeds, you are liable. So that's one way that they eliminate seed saving, is through contracts. Another way they want to do it is through a terminator technology, which creates sterile seeds, which is not yet deployed, but could be a disaster for our food security and could have the greatest problem of anything we've talked about today. And the third way is to eliminate seed saving outfits, seed cleaners, mm-hmm. that help farmers to save seeds. And so when someone wants to get to replant their seeds, they'll often send it to a seed cleaner. In some cases, there's mobile seed cleaners that help them. And so if they could intimidate and wipe out the seed cleaners, then it makes it harder for farmers to save seeds. And so they have focused at least on three seed cleaners in the United States with lawsuits, which are, in my opinion, are frivolous and based on heavy-handedness, but they are effective in their intimidation tactics. I mean, they've made maybe close to $200 million already from farmers and farm organizations from intimidation and settlement through the seed saving thing, and now they're going after the seed cleaners. So it's a horrendous thing. In fact, one of the people involved in issuing subpoenas in the latest seed saver thing, they also subpoenaed the seed savers, seed cleaners' clients, and one guy laughed and said, it's a rural cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
And so his arrogance was echoed in emails around the world, because, in fact, it is a rural cleansing, and it's a disaster.
Is there anything that individuals can do to support seed cleaners who are being unfairly prosecuted at this time?
I don't know. I know that someone was hoping to set up a legal defense fund, but I'm not aware of that. We have our own financial problems right now with the economic collapse. As an NGO, a non-governmental organization
yeah.
that deals with nonprofit, we're struggling because we're the end of the whip. You know, someone usually people pay their donations after they've made their money. Well, people aren't making a lot of money now, so donations are down for all these nonprofit groups. So it's a tough time. We do have a membership program at healthiereating.org. You can become a member for free, or you can choose to contribute.
And the largest threat to food sovereignty now is the possibility of the introduction of Terminator technology, would you say? Or something
well,
else?
See, the thing is, I want to say it's the largest threat. You see, I think that the threat of Terminator technology is much bigger than food sovereignty. You see, right now there's 1.4 billion farmers that save seeds. 1.4 billion. Now, farmers save seeds, and what happens is the seeds become selected for expression in a particular climate and geography and soil conditions. So the variety of seeds out there is in millions upon millions of different types of genetics. Now, when the biotech industry takes over a seed area like they did with the soy, corn, cotton, and canola, in the Midwest, the number of companies that had were the source of the seeds went from 400 to 500 down to 4 or 5. And so what it means is then farmers are limited to the genetics, to the seed diversity, to just the few varieties in the catalogs of these companies. And the companies are actually consciously eliminating the non-GM varieties in many categories, forcing farmers to buy the GM varieties, and also eliminating much of the biodiversity in the seed supply at the same time. If they were able to eliminate seed saving on the planet, they would eliminate one of the most important buffers we have against disease and climate change, which is the diversity of seeds, which provide ability to survive in adverse conditions, and also diversity in terms of its medical qualities and health-giving qualities. There's so much aspects of the food that we eat that we're not aware of that give health, that when we eliminate some of this diversity, we eliminate forever the opportunity for people to be eating natural medicinal plants and materials in their food. So if they were to eliminate this diversity and just start selling the products in their catalogs, then they're betting the entire food supply on these limited genetics. And so that could be a catastrophe of unprecedented proportions, especially when we're facing climate change right now.
Well, it sounds like the most effective thing the listeners can do is go to your website, and we can begin to boycott genetically engineered foods.
And the way to boycott it is not necessarily through just by anger saying we have to stop these companies. It's learning more about the health dangers and sharing that with others. And we've got the information in books, DVDs, CDs, PowerPoint presentations, pamphlets. A lot of stuff is free online at healthiereating.org. And so we want to equip people so that the decision to go non-GMO is not simply based on this abstract notion of protecting our future,
mm-hmm.
but on the very concrete notion of protecting your gut bacteria from turning it into living pesticide factories, from protecting your offspring from death and problems that we've seen in laboratories, from protecting your organs from being the cells changing shape and function, things that actually are happening to animals and probably people all over the country. And so I would say, yes, the most important thing is to protect yourself from GMOs, learn how to do it, get the non-GMO shopping guide. In fact, you can get your local health food store to get it for free, and there's ways that you can that's explained on the website. So then ask them to get an extra package of 50 for you that you could hand around to your friends and on campus, etc.
Great. Jeffrey Smith, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Thank you for everything you're doing.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk to you again in the future.
All right. Safe eating.
Bye.
The preceding program is a production of WHA.